Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Lee Warwick, front-end developer with experience in JavaScript, Node, React, and Vue. He's the Project Codex organizer and co-host of Tech Junior Podcast. Welcome, Lee.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Lee, before we get started, would you just give a little introduction to yourself, tell the listeners kind of how you got started in the industry?
Sure. It's a little bit of a long story. I didn't have a traditional career path into development. So I think you might wonder about how people get into, you know, coding, and you think, well, they probably go to college, they probably study computer science, and then they pop out the other side knowing Java, jump into the workforce, and it's kind of off to the races. I didn't have that path at all. I did go to college. I did study Java in college, but it was miserable. Like, first, I wasn't prepared for what computer science is and what I needed to learn. I didn't really know what coding was or what it should be. So coming into it fresh, we started learning binary and hexadecimal and stuff and printing a lot of for loops and triangles and stuff to the screen. And I thought, well, that's one, really boring and has nothing to do with the programs that I would think I would make. And two, I don't really see how I can get to making the software I want to make from there. So on top of that, the instructor was not great. So I don't know if we want to get into that story. He walked in and started talking about like how his best friend had stolen his ex-wife on the first class, like immediately as he started class, which was like super unprofessional for a university professor. He's still there, by the way. Wow. I actually met somebody at a conference that was like, oh man, I know him. He's still teaching. I hope he straightened his life out after that. I'm sure it was a rough period. But in any case, I went on and studied Japanese language after that. So that's always been a passion of mine, and I was really happy to get the chance to do that. I did study abroad in Japan, so I got a really good perspective on like different cultures and different experiences like that. But then after that, I got out and became a fireman and a paramedic and then a nurse. And then I took a coding boot camp and became a developer. It was a roundabout way of getting there. I got a lot of life experience on the way. But totally a non-traditional career path.
So what brought you back to the boot camp?
I was sitting in the trauma emergency room here in Ocala. And I was kind of in between taking care of patients. And I've always had this lingering feeling of, man, what if I hadn't given up on development? Because I did enjoy coding, but I didn't see where I would be any good at it from my experience in college. So I was like messing around on free code camp or whatever and trying to learn Python. And my boss walked behind me and was like, hey, Lee, what are you doing? You know, she just sees all these variables and functions and stuff on the screen. And it's obviously not patient care charting or anything. And I was like, well, I'm, you know, trying to learn code. And she's like, oh, she's very confused by that. And she just looks at me and she goes, well, Lee, you know, you got to want it. And at that moment, I was like, you know what? You're right. I don't want this. I don't want to be a nurse. I don't want to do this anymore. It's an incredibly stressful profession. Healthcare in general is kind of in a state of crisis in our country. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. I was pretty burned out. So I looked up code boot camps that had become a thing by that period. You know, back when I was in college, that was not a thing. So lo and behold, there's one here in Orlando. And so I signed up for that, made the drive, thought it was a scam, didn't think I'd get anywhere with it, but paid the money anyway and managed to get a job after that. So I was one of the lucky ones, I guess.
So what are you working on these days?
So now I'm a developer for realtruck.com, which is a e-commerce site that's it's part of a larger company that mostly has to do with manufacturing truck parts. So like bumpers and running boards and that sort of thing. All the candy that people like to put on their truck. And so we've got a bunch of companies under that umbrella that manufacture those parts. And our job is to sell those things through our website. So I get to deal with a pretty large application that is doing some interesting things with data because of all the massive amounts of parts and configuring it for certain vehicles and that sort of thing that's built in Vue and running on a Nuxt node server. That's most of my day is messing with that. We're also branching out into doing a lot of AWS stuff. So making a lot of like back end of the front end type of things. So that's mainly what I'm wrestling with now.
Very nice. Yeah. And you mentioned always wondering if you'd be any good at coding. I've been doing this 20 years and I still often wonder if I'm ever going to be any good at it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that too.
It seems like you do a lot of work in the community and working with other developers and blogging and tweeting and hosting your own podcast devoted to junior developers. What spurred the interest in helping specifically junior developers and what have you been doing along those lines?
So coming out of the bootcamp, there's kind of this hope and dream whenever you sign up for one of these things where you're like, okay, I can learn the material, but after that, can I get somebody to give me that chance or take a chance on me? And it's really an interesting problem because companies traditionally, you would think like, okay, I want to hire somebody at a low salary and then, you know, grandfather them out as they retire at a higher salary. With development, it's not really like that. You see a lot of companies that go straight in and say, I want to buy the most expensive developer that I can afford, somebody with the most experience. So you get big companies like Netflix that are, they only hire senior developers. And as a junior coming out into the workforce and trying to get that first opportunity, it's really strange to look at a job board and see almost no junior developer positions. So I definitely felt that burn coming out of the bootcamp that there's kind of this void where you get out of even college or a bootcamp, and you've got some skills, but you need somebody to kind of take you a little bit further before you're able to be dropped into a company and be productive. There's a lot of work to be done after that. So you've got to, you know, get better at Git. You got to learn Agile, which almost nobody spends any time on in school. A lot of processes that maybe you don't learn about or wouldn't even think to know about or look into when you first come out of school. And I just feel like that's a huge disservice to not only the people that want to be developers, but us as developers in the industry. We're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot by not doing that stuff, not giving people those opportunities to learn those things. But to answer your question more directly, like how did I get into it? When I was in the boot camp, I had another classmate that kind of wanted to start his own business. And so he said, let's make our own agency, basically. We might not get jobs when we first get out, but let's team up and start taking on freelance work. And so that didn't happen. We got together and decided like, we're going to do this thing. We made business cards and all that. But as soon as we got out, like, you know, one guy went to South America and enrolled in like traditional college after the boot camp. The other guy, he went back into his previous career. And so what we had done in the meantime was instead of going straight to an agency, we decided, why don't we give some talks and do some community stuff to, you know, see if that'll help us get hired. And so I ended up making a meetup. And through that, I got hired like the next week as soon as we started the meetup. And I just said, I'll just keep it going and kind of see where it goes. That kind of, I didn't think it would do well. It started to do well. And then I had this wild hair where I was like, why don't I make a podcast? And so I ended up starting that off as well because, you know, looking at iTunes and whatnot, there's not a whole lot of podcasts out there that are geared towards junior developers either.
So a little while back, you had mentioned about companies, junior developers coming on and, you know, not finding a lot of jobs that are geared there where companies are looking for them. What do you think? Why do you think that is? Why do you think companies are missing out on or looking for junior devs to be brought on?
So why they're opposed to it, basically?
Yeah. Why aren't there jobs? I mean, it seems like we're cranking out junior devs. I mean, those are definitely coming out of colleges and boot camps, and there's availability there. But why do you think companies are not looking for those, not looking for them in the amount that they should be?
When you really boil it down, the reason, and I think we all know it, is fear. There's a fear that this person they're going to hire is not going to work out. And more than that, there's a fear that when they hire this person, it's going to, in some catastrophic fashion, bring down the code base or kill the app or something. They're going to make some kind of decision. They're going to code something, push something up to production, and it's going to wreck everything. Or they're not going to be productive for months or even years. They're going to require like so much time of the current team to mentor that person, to bring them up to a level where they're productive. And I think that that's nonsense. I think it's a overestimation of the problem. I think it's a lack of preparation on the company side and a lack of investment in processes to make that a more smooth process. Looking at interviewing, okay. Interviewing in technology is like this hilarious circus, okay? looking back a few years, we had this thing where you'd go into an interview and they wouldn't ask you any technical questions at all. They would look at your resume and go, okay, great. They'd say, all right, John, tell me why manhole covers are round or something like that. And then you'd sit there and you'd like, oh man, I don't really know. And you'd, you know, hear about this practice or something, and you come to another interview and you'd read a book of brain teasers that's like, why are manhole covers round and how do you turn a light switch on in a room or something that has no windows or whatever. So you'd prep by reading some stupid book that has all these brain teasers in it. Now, instead of doing that, we've evolved to, John, how do you solve this arcane algorithm problem that I have on this whiteboard with no Googling at all in 10 minutes in front of a live audience? And so you get burned by that, and then you go read Cracking the Coding interview for like a month or whatever and try and do that. So the thing is, neither one of those methods actually vets somebody for the actual job that they're going to be doing. And so the problem is, we don't really have a good way of doing that. We don't have a good way of looking at somebody and evaluating them based on their resume and their cover letter and a couple interviews and saying like, this person's going to work out or this person's not going to work out. And so there's a lot of fear in that process of hiring somebody new. Whereas if, John, you've got a track record of doing well at, you know, X, Y, and Z company, then go, well, okay, at least these other companies were able to do something with this person. So he'll probably work out for us too, or she'll probably work out for us too, which is also folly, I'm sure, as you guys know, because
yes,
people can go through a lot of jobs and still be terrible developers. So that's why it's kind of a ridiculous thing, but it's out there. People are totally scared of hiring people straight out of school or straight out of a boot camp.
I've worked with a lot of different organizations and worked on a number of different projects where we were only interested in bringing on senior developers because we needed to hit the ground running. We needed to put out so many features per sprint. We needed to code as much as we possibly could. But when you fill a team with nothing but senior level talent, then you have a lot of interesting problems that you have to contend with. My preference is to have a good mix, a diverse mix. People from all levels and all walks of life, because you're going to get different ideas in that room where, and hopefully come up with a better solution that you might normally get. I've been involved in mock interviews at different universities and helped students practice their interviewing techniques from both sides of the table and trying to help them convey what it is they've learned, how they go about learning. Because when I'm looking to hire someone that maybe doesn't necessarily have 20 languages on their resume that the job posting asked about, I want to know how they're going to learn the thing that they really need to learn to be productive on the team.
Sure, yeah. I think you touched on something that's really part of the story that people don't think about, and that's the composition of a team. So you talk about junior developers, and all of a sudden that turns into, I can't hire a bunch of junior developers. But really, you don't need to hire a bunch. You need to hire one when you can or when it's appropriate. And so just like it would be a disaster to have a development team that's all junior developers and one senior developer, you could also make the case that it's kind of a disaster to have a development team that's all senior developers. You talked about like a couple of buzzwords that I hear a lot when it comes to juniors, like we need to iterate quickly. We need to code our butts off. We need to ship this product. We've got a deadline, blah, blah, blah. The thing is, unless you are a Netflix or something and you're making like the cutting edge streaming software of the future, how much of that work is actually senior developer level work? How much of it is grunt work? Like how much of it is, hey, I need somebody to change the text on this button, or I need somebody to write these unit tests, or to, you know, to add documentation to our readme or something like that. Stuff that would annoy, you know, a senior developer maybe would excite a junior developer. And so you lose that dynamic in your team when you only hire senior developers. And that's sad. I mean, it's making everybody miserable. It drives the turnover in the industry more. It's a huge problem, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I find that on those teams that are really more concerned with, we got to ship code, they're inevitably pushing out just garbage. If you're more concerned with shipping code than you are with delivering value and delivering features, then there's some kind of mix up on your priorities there.
It's funny that you say that, that a bunch of senior developers who should know better, right, are producing garbage quality code. And I think that part of that is just the speed of it. Like, hey, we need to do this as fast as possible, which doesn't lead you to the solution you're hoping that it will. But another point there is that junior developers can help increase your code's quality, because when you code something and you show it to me and I have to work on this thing that you built, and I look at it and go, what is this? Like, what is this thing that you wrote? I don't even understand this. You're like, yeah, man, it's a one-liner. It's got generators and all kinds of stuff. And you're like, okay, great. Can you explain how it works? And then you look at it and go, well, I know what it does, but I don't really know exactly what this line does. So you can see, like, it can lead to problems with the code quality, like you're talking about, where you're not really concerned with the readability and maintainability of it because you're iterating so quickly. So that's another opportunity that you can use junior developers for, is kind of like code canaries, where they look at the code base and go like, this is nonsense. I don't know what this is. That's kind of an indication to you to double check that and say, is this code unreadable to this person because they're not up to speed, or because I wrote something that's crazy and obtuse?
Junior developers will absolutely keep me honest, because if they're asking me to explain something, I better be able to explain it in a way that someone that didn't write it can understand it, because somebody's going to have to maintain it. And if I can't explain it to them, I'm probably not going to remember what I did tomorrow if I have to go in and modify something. There's also, I enjoy working with those that are, like you said, eager and really energized to work on the things. I want to work with those people that have just discovered this technology or are in the throes of diving deep into something and learning it.
Yeah, I can tell you from my experience in healthcare that, first of all, like I said before, healthcare is kind of a meat grinder. Some of the people that you find yourself working amongst are pretty burned out. And that's not a really good environment to keep your organization going. So I'm not saying that all developers are burnouts or whatever. You get a certain number of years on and you just sour or whatever. That's not necessarily true. But in the case of healthcare, if you've got a organization where everybody's maxed out all the time and everybody's burned out, when you throw somebody new into that mix, what do you think is going to happen to them? They're going to get pretty sour, pretty fast, pretty salty. I saw that firsthand at the fire department and in hospitals where people are at their limit. They've been doing this for a long time. They're burned out. The stuff that they're going to teach you and the way they're going to treat you is going to start to burn you out too. Having that fresh set of eyes, that mindset and attitude of, I want to learn this, I want to explore new things, that's going to keep you going as a senior developer, having somebody that's got that motivation coming in that's fresh. And it's just a really great opportunity for an organization to leverage that. You know, those people are out there in force. There's thousands of developers that are going through these programs, going through boot camps, finishing college and that sort of thing. And they just can't find any company that wants to take a chance on them. There's a huge mismatch there in what the company thinks they need and the available talent that's out there.
So we've been talking about what, like if you're the senior developer and you're working at a company, maybe encouraging your company to hire some juniors or something like that. But if you're a junior in the market, what can you do to find that job? You mentioned earlier that you got community involvement and that seemed to help. But I feel like you got lucky with that. So is there any other tips that you might have for junior developers that are looking for jobs in their area?
I'll say that you mentioned luck, and that is a factor. But I will say that the harder you work, the luckier you will get. You cannot go into a boot camp or a college, whatever it may be self-taught and limp into it. You can't go in and just do the minimum. You can't go into this thing and think like, yeah, I'll pass the test or whatever, and then I'll get this job and I'll be cruising and living pretty. That's not how it works. You guys have been doing this a while. You've probably been in interviews with people that have that mindset. It becomes readily apparent that they have that mindset just from talking to them for a few minutes. So it's really easy to sniff that out, and you're just not going to get hired that way. Before you even start down this path of becoming a programmer, you need to realize that it is a profession that requires a certain attitude and mindset. When I was in the fire department and I was in fire school, I had an instructor that said, you guys have to become students of the game. There's another saying in the fire department that being a fireman is a lifestyle and not a career. I'm not saying that you have to live, eat, sleep, and breathe development, but it damn sure can help you get a job faster. So whenever I heard that in fire school, I was like, this guy's crazy. This is dumb. He was talking about like reading Fire magazine on the toilet and stuff because he was like so ate up with it. I was like, I don't like this enough to do that. I want to go home and like enjoy my time off. And that's fine and that's good. But what he was trying to say was that you got to really like it. You got to be into it. You got to want it, like my other boss said. So when you go through the boot camp, you got to work hard, obviously, study hard, but take advantage of every opportunity that you're given to go a little bit further, you know, learn a little bit more, dig into stuff. Don't just take stuff at face value. Like, yeah, John said, learn, you know, VAR or whatever. If you're learning JavaScript, maybe you want to look at let and const. Maybe you want to read a little bit more about that. Oh man, people are arguing on the internet about let and const. Maybe I should read into it a little bit. Stuff like that is going to, you know, if you keep that attitude and that mindset, that's going to carry you forward. When you get out of the boot camp or whatever you're doing, when you go to apply to jobs, you're going to like emanate that. You're going to come off as somebody that really cares about the work that they're trying to get a job in. Somebody that's going to put that effort in. And most importantly, I think like John said earlier, when he was in interviews, companies are looking for somebody that is not necessarily the smartest developer or I don't know, whatever factor you're looking for. What they're looking for is somebody that can learn and is passionate about learning, has a good attitude. And the best way to convey that is to do it and be that person. There's no like cute trick or something to convince somebody that you're something you're not. You have to be somebody that likes to learn and can demonstrate that. You got to build projects and show them off, build a nice website, build a great portfolio, stuff like that. And the bootcamp's not going to handhold you through all that. You got to put that work in yourself. But if you do that, you're going to have a much easier time getting hired.
That is definitely some good advice. Work your butt off, basically, at least at the beginning. I will say that that's very similar to kind of like my general philosophy, which is go one step further. So like whatever you know, like if somebody shows you something new, you can accept it at face value. But then when they leave the room, go one level down. Go learn that next step. So what should companies know when they're hiring new developers? Like I just hired two new developers. They're junior. What does the company need to do to onboard them correctly or to take proper advantage of having those new developers?
So that's a great question. You have to first realize that it's an investment. You have to invest in it a little bit. You don't have to put like your bottom line on the line to do it, but you definitely have to put some effort into it. And you may have to not squeeze your current team to the point where they have no time. So they're going to spend a little bit of time on your new person. Doesn't have to be all their time, especially if you do your interviews correctly, but they're going to spend some time and you just need to like make peace with that basically. From there, like having a process in place is incredibly helpful. This all kind of harkens back to the 7 P's. So I'll only say 6 of them, but prior proper preparation prevents poor performance. You've got to set things up in advance. You can't just, okay, yeah, let's hire a junior developer. That's the right thing to do. And then hire them and like, okay, welcome to the company. See you in 3 months. Hope you're productive. And if not, you're fired. That's the wrong way to do it. You can't do that. So first of all, you got to fix your interviews. You got to screen for this candidate that's actually has an interest in the technology that you're actually using and has some kind of aptitude, has also the right attitude. So once you get that down, you got to have some people that are good at interviewing so that you get these candidates. And then aside from that, like you got to give your current team the opportunity to become mentors. They need to have, let's say, I did a Twitter poll about this a couple months back, but I asked people, hey, if you've ever mentored somebody, how many hours of your week did you spend mentoring? And the gross majority said 0 to 5 hours. So you got to at least give your guys or your girls 0 to 5 hours a week to spend on mentoring. So expect worst case, they're going to spend like an hour a day helping this new person. And I'm sure that's a lot more than most junior developers actually get when they get to their first job. I know myself personally, I was lucky to get the one senior guy's ear for like an hour a day. And that was usually if things were going like catastrophically wrong. You can also help by encouraging stuff like pair programming. Have your new person shadow a more experienced person, or take your new people and put them all together and set them on a task. So let them kind of learn as a group and let the stronger people pull up the weaker people. That's going to make your stronger people better as well as your weaker people. let your senior developers also have an opportunity at mentorship. So we often kind of like downplay the soft skills, even though we hearken back to it all the time in LinkedIn and in Twitter and stuff. Man, I want somebody with soft skills. We need soft skills in our company, on and on and on, but we never give anybody the chance to practice it. So give them that chance and let them be mentors. Let them go into a code review and bring somebody up and skill them up and actually coach them. That's going to not only make them better developers because they're going to learn how to talk, you know, very technical concepts to people that are not as technical, but it's going to help them as leaders. That gives them an opportunity to be better team leaders. People look at it as an expense, but they need to look at it as this is an investment that's going to give me pretty good returns.
For companies and maybe junior developers, what resources might you direct people to? Either looking to make themselves more hireable, or you know, finding that job and landing it, or on the company side, trying to say, okay, let's prepare ourselves for hiring these junior developers.
I think podcasts are a hugely undervalued thing. So listen to the Six Figure Developer, listen to Tech Junior, listen to knuckleheads that actually care about this stuff. They probably have a pretty good idea about it. Being involved in the community outside of that. So go to meetups, go to conferences, participate in those things. So give talks. A lot of that stuff is, we see it, we don't really think about it. We're like, yeah, I would just want to go to the conference just because, but it's a huge opportunity for, you know, networking as well as learning. So if you're new to the field and you want to get a job, participate in the community. And I don't mean passively, I mean actively. So you can't just like, oh, I joined all these Slack groups and I got on Twitter, I made an account, I went to a conference. That's not enough. You've got to get on there and ask people questions. Be that not annoying, but pleasantly persistent person that is like, hey, John, help me with this problem. Or hey, Clayton, I'm working on this React app and I ran into this snag. Here's my code base. I'm having a problem in this file. Tell me what I'm doing wrong if you have a minute. Something like that. You can't just jump on there and then kind of lurk. That's not going to help. You have to participate a little bit. And if you're a company, like I would encourage you to encourage your people to do that stuff. Give them the opportunity to participate in the community. If there's a conference in your area and it happens on a weekday, let your team take a day to go to the conference. Just doing that, a lot of them will probably buy their own ticket. Or if you're super great, buy them a ticket. That would be nice. Encourage your people to go and speak at conferences. I actually, where I work at RealTruck, I write a blog, obviously, we talked about. One of our SEO guys came up to me and he's like, hey, do you have a blog? And I was like, yeah, why? He's like, somebody clicked on our website from China because they read your blog. I was like, well, I wrote it in English, man. I don't know what you're talking about. But what had happened was I wrote it on DevTO, and that is translated in China to Chinese. And somebody on there read my profile and it said, I work for realtruck.com. And so they're like, okay, I want to check out this website. And they clicked on it. There's the opportunity. You wouldn't think developer truck parts doesn't really mix. But I actually drove traffic to our website just by being this community person that goes out there and writes articles and talks at conferences and stuff. So you may actually do some good for your SEO and for your sales and stuff just by being a positive presence in the community. And you can see that in a lot of companies, technology companies that go out there and do that, but you don't have to be a technology company.
If our listeners wanted to kind of listen to you more, I know we've mentioned your podcast, blog, your fantastic website, which I jumped on earlier and was like, how could you not hire this guy for front end? He actually knows how to design things and make them look nice. Where should our listeners find you in all those places?
So you can find me online at leewark.com, which I think is the website you're talking about, John.
Yep.
Everything that I do is linked on there. You can listen to our podcast, Tech Junior, at techjar.dev or DEV. You can find me on Twitter at Leewark Jr. and Tech Junior at TechJR Podcast.
Awesome. Do you have any upcoming speaking engagements that you can kind of shout out?
Yeah, I'm going to be a panelist at Flashback Conference, which is here in Orlando on February 10th and 11th. It is organized by a local developer advocate that we have, Brian Rinaldi, that works for Stackbit. So it's a passion project of his. He decided up like all by on his own, he's going to make a conference for the area because we don't get a lot. And so he's made this conference that is all about looking back on the history of web development and how that's going to lead to the future of web development. So I'll be giving a panel on the 11th, or part of a panel, where we talk about modern web development, which should be fun. So come out and see that.
All right. Thanks, Lee. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Hey, thanks you guys so much for having me. Really appreciate being here.
That was Lee Warwick. Lee is a front-end developer with experience in JavaScript, Node, React, and Vue. He's the Project Codex organizer and co-host of Tech Junior Podcast.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.